Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Simon Barrett, and joining me today, we have an illustrious panel. Author, activist, and bar owner, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Simon, for having me here. I missed last week, and I'm looking forward to a great discussion and entertaining the audience.
Oh, you just like to come on here and cause trouble.
Yeah, poetry. Someone has to.
Also, joining us is well-known LA-based attorney, Peter Haven. Peter, welcome.
Well, it's great to be back, and it's great to have Sam back. I enjoy it when he makes trouble for all of us. I missed him last week.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Sam's just a have-to-have guy. And rounding out today's list of troublemakers, we have the always colorful owner of LA-based Sunset Protection, John Perry. John, it is a pleasure to talk to you again.
Hey, Simon. Always good to be with you. And sorry for calling in late. I was finishing up an email from a friend of mine in the Philippines, who, by the way, looks like Raquel Welch in 10,000 years B.C.
Ooh.
And she just informed me that her mother was diagnosed with cancer and needs $5,000.
Oh, dear.
Well, John, you better forward that money to me to hold in trust. I'll take care of it.
I don't know what to do, Peter. I'm torn.
John. I'm pretty certain if you hang on another couple of hours, you'll get an email from some long-lost relative that has died, and you're now going to be $20 million richer.
Yeah, for those interested parties, I haven't won the lotto yet, so don't bother.
I have to admit that I wasn't sure that we would be having a program today. John, I had assumed you would be in Washington, D.C., at the invitation of President Obama to celebrate his inauguration, but apparently you didn't make it.
Actually, it's funny you should say that, Simon, because my invitation was in the mail. I had a front row seat, but out of my loyalty to Blog Talk Radio and you, I declined the invitation. I'm here today.
And Sam, I'm guessing the same goes for you.
Well, what happened to mine is I did get an invitation, but I'm really worried about it. And it's for tomorrow. It's not for the swearing-in ceremony. It's for the inaugural ball, sitting at the president's table. And it was signed by Manti Te'o when it was delivered to me by Lance Armstrong on a unicycle. So I'm a little worried about if it's real, is it fake? I don't know. I'm going to have call in the experts to see what they determine. And then also I want to have the paper tested to see if it was doped or not doped.
Well, it's just nice to know that Lance is still delivering for the U.S. Postal Service.
Touché.
And Sam, let me guess. I mean, that there were strings attached with the invitation. It was a bring-your-own chicken wings deal.
bring my own... bring that, and then he was also going to explain to me how I can tell my employees that it's not his fault that they're getting less money every week in their paychecks.
Right.
The president was going to show me how to do that.
Right. And I'll quickly tell you my story. I mean, I did get a phone call from the White House, but apparently the U.S. Postal Service is suffering from cutbacks, etc. So, yeah, I didn't get my invite in time. How about you, Peter?
Well, no, I haven't gotten any invites at all, but it reminded me of the days when I worked on the Hill, and I was there for an inauguration, and I just remember all these invitations to all these inaugural balls, and I don't think I went to any of them, but I just remember the whole weekend there were just all these different inaugural balls, and you could go to, you know, there were different levels of balldom. You know, you could go to the big fancy balls, or you could go to the little kids ball and all this other stuff, and I don't think I went to any of them, and I did not get an invitation to this one, I'm sorry to say.
Well, of course, the Republicans are sponsoring their own. It's called the Kicked in the Balls Ball.
Well, you got to hand it to them. They know how to throw a tea party.
Okay. I think we've pretty much exhausted the president's balls. I was thinking that we might do a sports-inspired program. All three of you are avid sportsmen. And I guess where I'd like to kick off is Lance Armstrong and his Oprah Winfrey interview. I watched bits and pieces, and I thought it was absolutely inane, stupid. I mean, why do it?
Very interesting. Why do it? You know, I think at a certain level, when people do something that they know is wrong, I think at a certain level, they want to confess to it. They want to say it. They want to talk about it. That desire to confess may be overcome by a lot of other factors. One of the factors that causes people, in my opinion, not to talk about it is denial. They're convinced that if they did it, they were justified in doing it. In the case of Lance, I think at some level he has a desire to confess everything. I think at another level he thinks that somehow he's going to regain a sense of respectability, or people will like him more, or something like that. He will somehow, I think, in his mind, redeem himself slightly. I think that this was the exact same thought that O.J. Simpson had in mind when he authored a book called, you know, If I Did It. I think at some level he was trying to redeem himself. And, you know, from what I understand, the timing of the interview took place a significant number of years after he could be criminally prosecuted for certain things, so there was a statute of limitations, exhaustion, and the same thing was in the Simpson case. And, you know, I heard some legal experts talk about it, and they believed his words were carefully crafted to try to minimize legal consequences. But I think overall the desire is to try to somehow to regain support for himself at some level. And even though I thought it was I can't stand watching that kind of stuff for more than a few minutes because it just makes me cringe and I feel like I have to change the channel. But, you know, in one sense, I'm just glad that at some level he is coming clean. He is spilling his guts for whatever purpose it is. I just like to hear the truth come out. And so many of these people have so many levels of denial or non-accountability, and they don't want to talk in any way. you know, the Roger Clemenses, the Barry Bonds, the Sammy Sosas, what have you. You know, I think it's refreshing that some guy just comes out and says the truth. Yeah, I did it. I did it. I was doping all the time. I never would have won any of that stuff if I hadn't been using something. And then whatever explanation he has for it, you know, we're all free to judge that accordingly. But for whatever it is, I'm just glad to hear the truth come out, at least as much as we can expect in something like this.
And John, I'm pretty certain that in your youth you were an avid cyclist. What did you make of Lance's confession?
Well, Simon, I made a point not to watch it. I can only take so much. I don't believe he had an epiphany like Paul on the road to Damascus. I think this was damage control, propaganda, an effort to rehabilitate himself, because from what I understand, he wants to get into triathlons, and he's banned from competition. So this was his first effort to so-called make amends. But what really bothers me is, and this is nothing new, because I talked about Andrew Carnegie and Alfred Nobel, people tie themselves to charity and popular causes in an effort to shield themselves from immoral, unethical, and even criminal behavior. And I don't even care that he used steroids or whatever he did to win his Tour de France. I had no interest in it. But what bothers me is his character, which doesn't change overnight. And he was seen to be a bully and used his money and power and his empire to intimidate people who did come out and try to tell the truth. So now for him to say he's going to tell the truth, I just find it offensive, and he needs to make amends to the people he damaged through his years of lies and denial. So that's where his effort should be made, and repay the money that he recovered in lawsuits, which turned out to be that he was the one lying, and maybe divest some of his $125 million fortune, I've heard, and pay the people who he's harmed. And I think one of the best lines I heard was, you were talking about the presidential ball. I heard what Armstrong did, he has a lot of ball.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I knew it would only be a matter of time before that one.
And also, I'd
like
to ask Peter, too, after Sam's comments. He talked about Lyle Alzado and the nexus between steroids and cancer. I'm wondering, I know there's not enough evidence because there hasn't been time to draw a connection, but I'm wondering, did the steroids cause his cancer now?
I'm going to come back to that.
Yeah.
But first, I want to go to Sam. Sam, you're
Sam,
a,
the ball's in your court.
You're
hey,
court.
Peter, that was good.
And Sam is a well-known cyclist in Youngstown, Ohio.
I when I heard Lance wasn't going to jump up and down on the couch, I decided not to watch it. Remember that with Tom Cruise, everybody who was jumping up and down on the couch? Okay.
He was
anyway,
so in love.
I think Peter touched on a good point, and so did you, John. But I think what it really comes down to, since we live in the land of the dollar bill, is this is all about money, money, and more money. And Lance Armstrong was going to get – it all came out. They had enough stuff, information on him, or facts that he lied, cheated, whatever he did, and he's going to be sued. And I guess he still is under investigation by the Department of Justice to get the $30 million that the stupid U.S. Postal Service paid him to do deliver the mail, as you were talking about, Peter. It's just ridiculous. No wonder the Postal Service is broke.
Yeah.
I mean, pays $30 million to this guy because he rides a bike that in a sport that's not, that most Americans don't even care about. And here's what's really funny about this sport. They were going to give Lance's first-place finish to the second-place finisher, but he was on dope. They were going to give it to the third-place finisher, but he was on dope. They have to go all the way down to the guy who came in 88th place to find out someone who wasn't doping. I mean, to give these awards out.
That could have been me.
And the whole thing is, it's a real joke. Does anybody really care about the Tour de France now? I mean, not that I even cared about it in the first place, but I guess those cyclist enthusiasts, I don't want to insult you or any of that. You know, enjoy it, have fun, keep it going. But you know, I think we all have to realize that it's about money. They all doped up to win money because they knew that their competitors were doing it, and if they didn't do it, and hopefully they didn't get caught or they had someone else's urine to do it, they were afraid they were going to lose. I mean, look at Roger Clemens at 40 years old. He's throwing the ball better than he ever did. And McGuire, Sosa, and they're all being, you know, they all doped. I mean, I think they have to for the money. And that's the type of society we've come into, that all our athletes are committing all sorts of crimes all the time at the college level, the pro level. What are we surprised about? And I think Armstrong's doing this because, as you guys all pointed out, it is about damage control. It's about damage to his wallet and his bank accounts, and he's going to get sued. So he came out hoping to get some sympathy and whatnot, and that the fines won't be as bad. And away he goes. Because you're right, John, he did hurt a lot of people, and I bet you all those people are probably contacting attorneys to start suing them.
As they should.
Peter, I have to ask you, because you're the only person on the panel that is a lawyer. Do you think that he's now opened himself up to a bunch more lawsuits?
I think he's exposed himself to lawsuits. And let me just, think out loud and talk about some of the claims that people may have against him. First of all, as I mentioned, I think it was last week, he settled a case, a defamation lawsuit against I think it was a British tabloid. And the British tabloid basically published a story alleging that he had done steroids and was doping, et cetera. And he sued that tabloid for defamation, and the tabloid settled the lawsuit. And when you settle a lawsuit, you typically enter into an agreement that says, this is it, boys and girls, we're done. No matter what we discover down the line, no matter what we find out later, we're done. This lawsuit is done. Now, it's my understanding that tabloid now wants to sue to overturn the settlement, and I really don't know how that lawsuit's going to pan out. The tabloid's response or argument is that the settlement was the byproduct of fraud, namely, he lied. And Lance's attorneys are going to argue that, well, you entered into a specific provision in the lawsuit that says it doesn't matter what you learn in the future, this is a settlement. And the law tends to favor settlements. It doesn't really want to keep relitigating things. So that tabloid may be out of luck. Now, that's one category of claims.
Before you move on, I know the story, and I can't remember if it was the Telegraph or the Daily Mail that was the tabloid involved. But they operate out of the UK, not the US. Could they possibly bring litigation in the UK?
Well, I usually, when there's a settlement, oftentimes there's a provision in a settlement that basically says that the court in which the case was presiding basically retains jurisdiction to enforce it. I don't know if there's such a provision in the UK, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was. So, yeah, I think they could probably refile or recommence litigation in the UK, because that's in theory where the settlement agreement was entered into. But I think the law generally in many jurisdictions, international as well as domestic, has this policy where, judges just want to get things settled. And they say, look, you had a chance to fight this allegation at the time, and you chose to settle it, and, now we've got a settled lawsuit. So the general policy in favor of settlements is pretty strong. So they have a claim, but I just don't know how it's going to pan out. And my experience has been you know, commonsensical provisions in the law usually apply in international settings as well as domestic settings. Each place has its own jurisdiction, its own set of laws, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if there were the same policies in place in the UK. So they could sue them in the UK. I kind of tend to think that that's not going to pan out, or that may result in a nominal settlement. They may get a portion of their settlement back, and people will call it a day. I think it's really just an attempt to get some amount of it back. I don't think they're going to get all of it. That's my opinion. Now, that's an opinion, obviously, from afar. I haven't seen the thing up close. Now, the second category of claims I would call all these sponsorship claims. And, again, my theory on that is I really don't think much of those claims. I think that everybody who knew the sport knew that everybody was doping. And I think that everybody who wanted to glom onto Lance's fame glommed onto it, and they got whatever they got. And for them at the time to have turned a blind eye to what was obvious, I mean, it was obvious to me that he was doping. It was obvious to me that all those baseball players were doping. And I think it's Pollyanna-ish to say, oh, we never thought about that, or he took advantage of us. The only thing that salvages those claims, in my opinion, is if there's a provision in whatever agreement, sponsorship agreements that he had, that specifically said, thou shalt not do this, and he violated that. And something tells me that if he was doping at the time and he was negotiating all these sponsorship agreements, that that provision might not be in there. He'd say, I'm not going to agree to that, and it would just disappear, which, by the way, is in and of itself a signal to the people who were sponsoring him that that was a potential problem. Now, the third category of claims are these people who were, quote-unquote, hurt by him. And that is, in my opinion, the most serious class of wrongs that took place here. But it really begs the question of what these people were doing when they got into these, you know, tiffs with Lance. Why were they trying to snitch on him? What did they expect to accomplish? And what did they think Lance was going to do? Did they think that, you know, some big guy with millions and millions of dollars was going to just roll over and let them take a shot at him? To me, when you take on a bull, you have at a certain risk, you get the horns. And I don't know what their motivation was for trying to call him out. Were they trying to make a buck? Were they trying to sell their stories to newspapers? I don't know. But that is I think, a very significant thing. And that, for me, is the biggest wrong here. But I need to know more about who those people are and what they were trying to accomplish and how those things unfolded.
Sam, I'm going to ask you a totally unfair question.
Okay.
All right. You run a small business, a bar. I seriously doubt that you test your employees for drugs. But if someone walked in, you know, smelling of marijuana, you likely would tell them to go home and come back another day.
Employees or customers?
Employees.
If one of the employees was out of it in any way, shape, or form, could be too much NyQuil, could be anything. Sure, they would not be working. But I'm lucky; most of my employees would never show up, and they would call somebody. They would, you know, they would make arrangements not to come in if they wanted to smoke dope or weren't feeling well or whatever. Now, as far as customers smelling like dope and walking in, they're welcome. I didn't see them. Maybe it's just bad perfume. But
they're going to be hungry.
Yeah, they're going to be hungry and thirsty. And yeah, and I mean, a lot of customers who come in smelling like dope. You know, I mean, that's probably every bar in America experiences that at some point.
No, Sam, don't take my question the wrong way.
Oh, I'm not. I would never. I would never. I don't believe in. I would never insult my I would never. This is the personal thing. I don't believe in drug testing. It's out there. You know, if people want to use it, they use it, and hopefully they use it responsibly, just like alcohol and owning guns and things of this, like driving a car. You know, anything that's dangerous, you hope people are responsible at doing it. There's a lot of dangerous things out there, you know, that we face every day of our lives that, you know, you don't consider dangerous. But it is.
You would agree that you would be less than happy if an employee came in reeking of marijuana.
Oh, sure, absolutely. It would be bad for business. It would be, and what have you. I wouldn't even let them in if they were not even working. We're going to sip. A lot of my employees come to the bar on their off days or off times or after work and have a couple drinks or eat some wings or watch the football, whatever. Shoot pool. Most of my employees are all on we have three pool league teams, and most of them are on the pool league teams when we host. And they drink, you know, when they're not working, sometimes the customers. And if they smelled like dope, I would send them home. I would send them out of the bar. I would not quit it. I just wouldn't want that image, so to speak. But again, what my employees do behind in their homes, none of my business, as long as it doesn't affect my business. Once they get, when they step through the door, Simon, I expect them to be all business. When they step out of the door, they're human beings. You know, and they can do whatever their heart's desire. Hope they don't hurt anybody. And have a good time and enjoy themselves and make a few bucks and enjoy their families and friends. But you're absolutely right. If they came through the door reeking of dope, well, I'll tell you something else, booze. If they reek the booze, I'd send them home. You know, that's just not good business. And it would just set such the domino effect would be terrible. Just be terrible. It's just common sense business-wise in my business. You have to do that. I would send the person on.
Right. Yeah. Just say no. How about you, John? I mean, if one of your people turned up smelling of dope, I seriously doubt that you'd let them continue on their merry way.
Well, since a lot of them carry guns, Simon, I think I'd be remiss not to fire them immediately. But I wanted to...
What, the guns or the employees?
Yeah, I guess I should have qualified that.
That's a good one. I didn't think of that.
not fire at the employee, no. Not literally.
But to discharge them.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't discharge anything at the employee, even though I'd be tempted. But thankfully, that's never happened to me. But I wanted to disagree with Peter and ask him what he thinks of my take on the Armstrong suits. One of the people accusing him is Floyd Landis, who was a teammate of his, and he actually filed a lawsuit under a whistleblower statute, claiming that Armstrong was trying to suborn his perjury and lie under oath. And I think the Postal Service might attach themselves to that lawsuit. And also, I think as far as the standing of the lawsuits, a lot of agreements are entered into based on good faith and on evidence provided in depositions. And they generally start essentially the following. The below-named individual, if called upon, can and will truthfully testify under oath to the following. And I'm sure Armstrong signed something saying he was innocent of the charges. So that was a bad faith agreement. And I got to believe that they do have some recourse. Just as bankruptcies are opened when it's determined assets are discovered at a later date. And I'd like Peter to speak on that if he thinks that could be a...
Let me just the last point first. They're very good points, both of them. The second point with respect to good faith and telling the truth and issues like taking oaths in court and whatnot.
In a deposition, that's under oath.
Well, at a deposition, the very first thing that happens in a deposition is you sit down in a room and a court reporter says, is everybody ready to go? And everybody says yes. And then she turns to the witness. And she says, do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, you know, so help you God, sometimes they don't say, so help you God, but they put them under oath. And the witness goes, yes, absolutely, I promise to tell the truth.
And also you sign your deposition.
Well, you don't have to sign it, but there's a place for you to sign it, and if you don't sign it, you're basically, it's treated as if you did review it and sign it. Mm. But the bottom line is you're under oath. Now, does that prevent people from lying? No. I'm sorry to say people lie in their depositions all the time. Happens a lot. And same thing in bankruptcy. You file for bankruptcy. Frequently, these things aren't disclosed. Now, I'm not condoning the practice. But what I'm saying is that it is so common that, you know, experienced lawyers don't assume just because you said it in your deposition that you're telling the truth. And so what's unfortunate about our adversarial system is that it's incumbent on the lawyers to investigate the allegations and prove that the person is not telling the truth, because frequently the only remedy that there ever is for these acts of perjury is getting it in front of a jury or a judge and showing that the witness is lying. And then the judge or jury seeing that, when they see that the witness lied, then the witness loses everything. Then the whole lawsuit caves in, and they get hit with a big judgment. And that's usually the only enforcement mechanism. And because that's usually the only enforcement mechanism, the practice is very common. And that's part of what's taken into the equation when you settle a lawsuit. You know, frequently we know somebody's lying, but we just don't think we can prove it. In some instances, we do. So your point is very valid. It's just that practically speaking, it happens so much, it's like trying to guard against the rain. It just happens so much.
I know, now, but if evidence is discovered subsequent to the case, you can reopen it, like a bankruptcy.
Well, when you settle a case, that you, like I said, in California, there's usually a provision in every settlement agreement that says you are agreeing to settle this case and every aspect of it, including any and all claims that you discover after today's date against the other person you're settling with. So there's a specific provision in a lawsuit, in a settlement in California, that says that you agree to waive any future claims as well, even though you don't know about them. Now, I'm assuming that kind of provision exists in every state, and it also exists internationally, because the law wants to settle lawsuits truly. It wants this stuff over with. Now, there is a claim to set aside any contract or any agreement based upon fraud, but then the question becomes how these two policies and how these two things weigh against each other. And I think that the law favoring settlement is so strong that generally speaking, these people are going to be out of luck. And I think that with respect to a settlement agreement, it should end up in some sort of out-of-court settlement. Lance should go to these people and say, look, I don't think you can win at court because of the settlement we signed, but I'll give you X dollars, or I'll give you Y dollars. Let's just call it a day. And if I'm the Daily Mail or whatever it is, I take whatever money I can and I move on. That's just my opinion. Now, the other thing you asked, I'm sorry, is there anything else you want to ask me about that, or can I talk about
I wanted to ask you something, Peter, being a lawyer, and John, you do investigations, and you too, Simon. It's my understanding, or maybe they don't do it anymore, but a lot of these celebrity endorsements, the people paying the endorse, have more clauses in it. Now, maybe they don't do that anymore. But
well, you could have a morality clause in a contract, and it's a bit like a conduct unbecoming clause or something like that. But it typically says, if you do this, then we're going to terminate the contract. Now, let's just say there was a morality clause in the contracts, and the contracts lasted for 5 years. And the contract said, you know, we're going to leech onto your fame and goodwill and good fortune, and you're going to wear our stuff. And in exchange for you doing all this, we're going to pay you this, and you're going to do this, and everybody's going to hold hands, drink cocoa, and sing Kumbaya, and we're all going to be happy. And the contract term's 5 or 6 years or 2 years or whatever it is. And everything happens during the course of that contract term. Everybody does exactly what they're supposed to under the contract. There is no perceived violation of the morality clause. And now, 5, 6, 7 years, 8 years later, whatever it is, somebody says, well, you violated that morality clause. And then the question becomes, how has the sponsor been damaged? And the sponsor argue, the defendant, Armstrong, says, well, look, you got everything you bargained for. I did everything you asked me to do. You got all the goodwill that existed at the time. And the contract was only 5 years. You didn't buy a lifetime of goodwill and good sponsorship. You only bought 5 years. And the sponsor says, no, you've tarnished us forever. You've made us look bad, which, by the way, I don't really believe. I don't really believe that that taint exists today. I think that it's 5, 6 years later, and everybody was duped. We were all duped. We were all fooled. So I don't really think the sponsor has a quantifiable or measurable harm. And when you prove damages, when you have to prove in a lawsuit, you have to prove how much you've been damaged. You can't just say I've been damaged.
Was he still doing any endorsements?
I don't think so, unless it's for doping products.
Yeah,
but nobody wants to, now nobody wants to touch him. Now, just real briefly, if I may, because John also raised a very good question earlier, and that was a whistleblower claim.
Right.
And for those who aren't familiar, a whistleblower claim is a claim where an employee says, I reported or I did something that was basically legally required. I refused to take steroids, or I reported somebody for doing something wrong that was a violation of law, and you fired me because of that, because I reported it. And that's a viable claim. Those are always very difficult to prove, but that is a viable claim. You typically see this like in a connection with a government contractor. The government contractor says that the entity it's paying money to has to comply with certain laws, and if they're not, then you know they're not supposed to get the contract, and somebody threatens to report them to the government, and they get fired, and then the lawsuit is on. Now, I'm not sure who the employee was. Landis was a teammate. I'm not sure if he was Lance's employee, and I don't know who the employer is on a U.S.-sponsored cycling team. And I don't know if the employee is the United States. I don't know if it's the Postal Service. I don't know if it's Lance. I don't really know. But in theory, if Lance isn't the employee, if he isn't the employer, and he's not the one ultimately making the decision to fire a teammate, that's up to the employer to decide, then I don't know how the whistleblower claim pans out. I'm not saying it isn't there, but technically speaking, it doesn't sound like a traditional whistleblower claim to me. And also, Landis himself isn't a particularly sympathetic figure because he doped and he won a medal and he got that medal stripped, or he won the Tour de France or something, and he lost it because he got caught doping. So he was basically trying to do the exact same thing Lance Armstrong was doing, only he was vastly less successful at it. You know, he couldn't even keep his one Tour de France for a month. He lost it almost immediately. He's kind of the Ben Johnson of the story. He's similar. So, you know, there may be some merit to these claims, but I just don't know how much they pan out. I think Lance is going to have to deal with a lot of litigation for a while. I don't think the litigation is going to amount to a huge amount of dollars, but I think he's going to have to give some money back and settle some claims and settle some lawsuits. And I think he's already factored this into his calculus, into his decision-making. If he's got $129 million, he may have to part with, I don't know, $10 million of it when everything's said and done. Just a guess. I just don't know.
Okay. Cheating in sports has been around for a very, very long time. Cheating in life has been around for a very, very long time. Peter, I think you make an incredibly valid point. You know, if you ask me to perform tasks X, Y, and Z, you know, for a period of time, and I perform them, and you get the benefits, yeah, being able to make money from advertising, there's no way 10 years later you should be able to come back and say, oh, we were only joking.
Well, you know, again, I think one of the big problems with that type of claim is it's difficult to measure the damages. And you can drag a case all the way to trial, but you have to be able to quantify your damages. You have to be able to come up with some reasonable measurement of your damages, and I don't know how to measure it. You know, just real briefly, a real brief segue. About 10 years ago, there was a motion picture that was put out by Sony Studios or something, and they had an advertisement. And the advertisement had all the – in the newspapers, I'm sure everyone looks at movie ads, and they see these things on the newspaper movie ad. Greatest picture I've ever seen, you know, Joe Smith, film critic, Dubuque, Iowa. Outstanding film, superbly acted, great presence, you know, Mary Sally Jane from Dallas movie critics. And Sony just had these ads, and there were these little – splatchy catchphrases all over the place about what a great movie it was. And guess what? Turned out to be utterly and completely false. It turned out that these people didn't exist. These credits were made up, and they got sued. And one of their defenses was, what's your harm? You paid $10 to see a movie. You saw a movie. What's your harm? And to a certain extent, this defense, it's what you call complete and total fraud without a harm. And basically, at the end of the day, Sony was an injunction was issued against Sony saying, don't do this anymore, and they stopped. And by the way, everybody else in the industry stopped too. But there was very difficult to measure an actionable harm there. And if you said, I never would have seen the movie but for the fact that it had all these splashy quotes, the law also imposes another requirement. It says, look, if you rely on something and your reliance is not reasonable, if it's not reasonable for you to have relied on that, then you're not in a position where you can recover for fraud or a number of other things. And, you know, there's an argument to be made that if the only reason you're seeing a movie is because somebody else says it's good, that's not reasonable reliance. In a world where these guys are, you know, everybody will basically say, give their 2 cents about anything in exchange for a buck. And, you know, do we really rely on what those critics say anyway? Okay, that's just one example. A bigger issue, in my opinion, that exists here, and I think John or Sam touched about it, is society. You know, the bottom line is everybody loves a winner. Nobody likes a loser. And we live in a world that's bottom line oriented. And when people have tremendous incentives to break the rules and be tremendously rewarded for it, it creates a real problem in the world. You know, I used to play a lot of sports, and there were always two different codes of ethics that circulated everywhere I went. Everywhere I went, I heard the same thing in different ways. Some guys would say, if you're not playing by the rules, you're not playing the same game. You're playing a different game. If you're not playing by these rules, and whatever you're doing, it isn't this sport, because this sport means you play by these rules. And other guys would say, if you're not doing everything you can to bend the rules and break the rules and help your team win, then you're not trying hard enough. In other words, let's say in a football game, you know, you can get away with holding a guy, which is an illegal penalty. But and if you don't hold him, your quarterback's going to get sacked and he's going to get hurt and you're going to lose a bunch of yardage. Do you hold him if you think you can get away with it, or if you think you can do it anyway? And some guys think, yeah, you hold him. You got to. You got to help your team. That's how you win. You know, a few years ago, Derek Jeter was at the plate, and a ball skimmed by him, and it never touched him. But he stepped back, and he shook his hand, and he said, oh, and they said, take first base. He totally cheated. Some guys said, that's not cheating. Other guys said, sure is cheating. But the bottom line is, the world in which we live is bottom line oriented, and everybody rewards you for winning. And if everybody rewards you for winning, people are going to do whatever they can to win. And it happens every day all over the world, in every walk of life, in every enterprise that human beings are involved with. There's this dialectic, this battle.
Oh, okay. Sam, your thoughts?
I just with what Peter just said at the end, I totally agree with him. I mean, that's the world we live in, and it's getting worse each day. It's about greed, money, and look, Bill Belichick, the great coach, was spying on teams, right? And he better pay a big fine, but he was spying. He's the guy with one of the greatest quarterbacks, if not the greatest quarterback, at least in the NFL. You know, he's one of the top five for sure. What did he spy for? But he had a spy. And see, he's done it. All the baseball players, who at least they're not getting elected to the Hall of Fame, blessedly, they doped. And whatever they were using, I think doping is, I think while using that as a universal word for cheating. And people cheat. And politicians lie to us, and we don't care. I mean, it could go on and on and on. And I guess the whole thing is it all comes down to the reputation. Now, Lance Armstrong will lose some money. Maybe, that'll be the end of him.
Okay, Sam. I want to make this really easy. You have wing night at your bar.
Right.
Now, essentially, we can take part of what Peter said and translate it to someone coming into your bar and writing a review and saying, your wings suck. But you wouldn't sue him, would you?
No, that's been posted on Facebook. I leave it up there. It's a disgruntled customer. You know, what are you going to do? Not everyone's going to be happy. You drink for this, for that. People do that. It could be someone jealous. It could be, you just ignore it. I leave any bad review up there. I don't want to, or a bad saying, I don't want people to think that, I got bad reviews of my novels. A couple of them I poke fun at them because you could tell that they had a bias or this or that. But you're gonna get for every one bad review of one person says my wings suck, I got 100 that say they're the greatest, and they are. Okay, and that's what we're known for. And that's it. That's just the way it is. You're not gonna please everybody. Well, you'd kill yourself. You might just lock yourself, or don't kill yourself. Lock yourself in your room and don't come out if you're gonna be afraid of criticism, in any way, shape, or form. And don't open up a business. Don't do anything because I'm sure all of us on this on the show today. Peter, you probably had some times you've been great in a case and people all loved you, and some other times maybe lost it and your client thought you sucked, right? John,
sure.
The same thing with you. Simon, with some of your reviews and stuff, you get comments that say people think we can't sue.
Oh.
We have to move on.
Right. I like it all, and I think the key thing is to read, understand, and just move on.
Yeah, but Peter and John are bringing up about the money, the whistleblower, and we know what this is all about. It's all about money, and it's getting worse and worse as in our culture. The haves are getting a lot more, and the have-not are getting a lot less, and you can see, and people are just. And they want to grab onto what they can. Lance Armstrong, I don't know how much money he got out of this. I don't know how much money he has left, or whatever. But he's doing all this to me. It's purely simple to circle the wagons around his bank account. So because he isn't going to get anything after this. I mean, he's done.
We happen to have the world's leading expert on circling the wagons around a bank account, Peter Haven. it's not so easy, is it?
Well, it's not easy, but there are big differences here. I do believe that people have a tremendous ability to forgive, But what people want more than anything is to see that you've been punished. They want to see that you've rolled over, you've fessed up, and you've paid your price. You paid your debt to society, whatever it is. If you don't pay your debt to society and you're perceived as constantly getting away with it, it just builds and builds and builds, and it becomes, in my opinion, unbearable. The thing about, you know, Lance is at some level, I think he's trying to take his medicine. He's trying to get the punishment over. He's just rolling in there and fessing up. He's been calculating about it. He's being a little manipulative about it, but he's just fessing up. I think he's probably had a lot of time to safeguard his assets. He's had a lot of time to put things away in places where they're untouchable.
That technically is asset.
Pardon me?
Technically, that is asset.
A play on words, I think.
I hear you. I used to ride a bike a lot, and I could tell you that that part of your anatomy feels especially painful after a day of riding. But the bottom line is, for instance, Simpson. Simpson had several years to plan for the civil lawsuit, and this is what he did. He basically created little companies, and he said, you know, this is ABC Inc., and I am the president and employee of ABC Inc. And it was just a little corporate show. And he would then take a substantial amount of money, and he would create an ERISA-qualified retirement plan for high-level executive employee of ABC Inc. And he would fund the ERISA plan with a substantial amount of money. And it was all complied with the law. It complied with ERISA. And by funding the plan in this manner, he was then a qualified pension beneficiary upon his retirement. And after he funded the plan, he retired. And he did this with three or four companies that he created, and he funded the ERISA pension plans, and he put, I don't know, I'm guessing about $4 million away in these various entities, and then he retired. And then he collected completely protected retirement pension benefits. People think that his pension from the NFL was the big ticket item. He did get a pension from the NFL, and it was equally untouchable, but that wasn't his big source of pension revenue. So basically, for the rest of his life, he gets this stream of income from these pensions, and I don't know what it is, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a month, or maybe more, I don't know, but it's untouchable. And he basically had plenty of time to set it up before the civil judgment was entered. And I don't know what Lance has done to protect his assets, but I presume he's put himself in a safe position where even in a worst-case scenario, he's still going to have money for the rest of his life. That's what I presume.
John, you've been quiet, and a quiet John is never a good thing.
It's out of respect and deference, Simon. I did have a couple things I wanted to dispute. Peter said, as far as loving winners, I'm a long-suffering Cub fan. I love the Cubs. Been 1908, I believe, since they won the World Series. And Sam from Cleveland has suffered in all sports. I don't think they've won anything since Lou Boudreau managed them in 1948.
They didn't even win that year. They made it to the World Series, and Willie Mays made that great catch, and that was the end of that team.
No, that was 54.
Was that 54?
Yeah, they won it in 48 with Lou Boudreau, the kid.
You're right. They did win it in 48. Yeah, I stand correct. 54 was the last time they were in the World Series.
And also, I wanted to say, as far as cheating.
No, that's not true.
People do, and I played sports as well, people do take liberties and push the envelope. But there is an unwritten rule, especially among professionals, not to do harm to your adversary, as far as you don't try to blow out a guy's knee and cost him his career.
What about the New Orleans Saints?
I don't think it's as bad as it's portrayed. There is an unwritten rule. You don't try to injure your opponent. And also, one thing that puzzled me, and Sam, maybe you know, I don't understand the post office giving this guy $30 million or whatever it was, because am I missing something? Are they trying to recruit the best and brightest and most in shape people to get lost in the bureaucratic shuffle of the post office. And by the way, I want to say to my postman, Steve, you're the greatest.
It's 30 million. I don't know if that was the course of how many years or whatnot.
Why do they need to recruit people? I don't understand. Why did they give them that money?
I don't know if it was just recruiting or just to put a smiley face on, hey, this is the U.S. Postal. I don't even remember seeing any ads with Lance Armstrong, but maybe they used him as a recruiter. Maybe they said, maybe he would.
I could see why they need to recruit competent people, but the post office, I don't know.
Well,
I don't
to me, every day when, you know, he was winning 7 Tour de Frances in a row, and a Tour de France, I don't know, takes about 30 days, and there's all kinds of film footage, there's all kinds of highlights, there's all kinds of video, and every time you looked up, and it wasn't every year that he was sponsored by the Postal Service, it was just, I think, a few years, but every time you looked up, he was there, and you had that big, nice emblem with the U.S. Postal Service, I guess the Eagle or whatever it was, and there he was, charging through fast, rapid, efficient, you know, delivering the goods, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know what benefit the Postal Service gets out of that, but they have promotional activities. They have advertisements. They have commercials that say, you know, we do this really well or blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there is a certain amount of goodwill associated with that. People say, yeah, Postal Service, look at us. We're winning, we're helping our athletes win. You know, there's warm and fuzzy feelings you get with it.
That actually offsets the check was lost in the mail.
Well, you know,
right. Let's face it. You don't see U.S. Postal, adverts advertising a tortoise with their emblem on the back.
No, I don't know. Let me ask you a question, John. How did you feel about that guy at Wrigley Field who interfered with the foul ball when
You're
they were in the
Steve Bartman.
Yeah, Bartman. How did you feel about him?
About the same as I feel about. I don't want to be too critical here, but let's just say he'll never be on my Christmas list.
Okay. Well, the reason he's never going to be on your Christmas list is because it is widely perceived that this fan interfered with Matty Alou's ability to catch a foul ball in a National League Championship Series that would have catapulted the Cubs to the World Series. And it's largely perceived in Chicago fans' lordom, Chicago Cub lordom, that because he interfered with that, they lost the series, they didn't go to the World Series. So even you, the long-suffering Cubs fan, what you want is a winner, just like everybody wants. And that's why everybody hates Bartman.
I have eternal hope, but I don't lose sleep over it, believe me.
Well, everybody loves a winner.
I just think that sport, and that's why there's going to be cheating and bounties and the amounts of money being thrown at them at the college. Look at the money we pay college coaches. I mean, you know what? When you guys told me how much money Penn State was raising early in the summer, after the Sandusky trial, how much their endowments were worth because of this football, the sports of football, and how much the alumni was rising up to raise money for good old Penn State. I mean, that's when I really I'm not a big college football fan, so I was shocked. I mean, just like how much all this money that, you know, at the college level where they look the other way with what people are doing and all sorts of stuff. Of course it's in the pro level because of the money. Look how much money Peter, you just laid out to me, you know, why it's okay. You know, basically this guy commits murder. He has money coming in, Simpson I'm talking about. He has money coming in. Then he goes and gets these sharp lawyers and accountants. They come up with this bogus corporation idea so he can keep his revenue stream going. No one gives a crap about the people who were killed, except for the families and some other people. And it's all about OJ keeps getting his money. Lance keeps getting his money. These guys, we're the suckers. We're the suckers because we watch these people. We promote it. We, you know, do all this sort of stuff. We're not fans. We're idiots.
Well,
you go on and get everything. And they cheat. I don't want to hear that, you know, they all cheat. They do. They have to. and they play with concussions. I feel bad for that. I've seen some films. I've seen poor Jim McMahon. The guy's my age. The guy was a great quarterback. He can't walk. He doesn't remember what day it is. And guaranteed he would dope up again to get out there, work for the thrill of the competition or whatnot, for the money.
Yeah, but Sam, he's always a little off.
What?
Yeah, he was always a little off, but he's even more off now, just like poor Bernie. They both got their bells rung.
Yeah,
he didn't have a lot. Fall,
but right? I understand that, but when once you're to that level, you know the great athletes, I understand. It's about the money, and then they get so much of it. Like and I'm talking like the Tiger Woods, the Lance Armstrongs, I would never. Do I buy stuff because Tiger Woods is out there saying, buy this? No, I don't. I go buy something because it doesn't matter, I'm not one of those guys, oh, my God, so-and-so endorsed it. It has to be great. Or you were talking about the movie theater. This critic said two thumbs up or whatever. Oh, yeah, you run out and go see it. I don't think that exists. I don't think most people do that. Maybe they do.
Well, Sam, didn't you go out and buy that spandex bike outfit because of Armstrong?
No. I don't even ride a bike. Okay, I don't mean about riding a bike either. I'm sorry, Lance.
Human beings just have an innate desire to engage in forms of hero worship, and it's inevitable. Whether you call it Lance Armstrong or Bill O'Reilly on Fox News or whatever, people want to believe in other people. And unfortunately, many people take advantage of that to their tremendous financial profit.
Let's mention Stan Musial, who just passed away, one of my idols.
Did he die?
Well, poor
he
Stan
died
the man died.
Well,
I think the same.
Died yesterday.
Both.
He did
both.
Too.
Both.
Wow.
Did.
I didn't know Stan the man died.
Yeah.
Are they gonna freeze his body like they froze Ted Williams?
They did more than freeze Ted Williams' body. They cut off his head and froze his head.
That sounds like a bad 50s movies.
I kid you not.
Are
the
you
theory
serious?
Of cryogenic, the theory of cryogenic freezing is that you need to freeze enough DNA that, in theory, sometime in the future, we'll have the ability to reconstruct the human body. And since the general perception is that most of what you are is stored in your brain, that the only DNA they really think to preserve now is the head. And that's what they do largely in cryogenic freezing situations. And, yes, it's my understanding that Ted Williams' head is in a freezer somewhere in San Diego, California.
That's morbid.
Well, I had read a story about John Holmes, the famous porn star. Yeah, I thought they had frozen another appendage, but I could be wrong.
That you pick and choose your assets, I guess. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't think so, Simon. He died of AIDS.
Yeah, you're right. Wasn't he involved in that Wonderland thing too? That was a movie.
That's a true story.
That is a true story. I know. I've read. Yeah, that was a really weird thing. What happened to that? So they shaved it. They shaved the head.
Well, it's my understanding that when they cryogenically freeze, they freeze just the head, at least in sophisticated cryogenic operations. And there was a big dispute because some member of his family thought this was horrific, and other members of the family believed they had the right to do it and that it was consistent with some sort of prior testamentary intent. And I think the family that wanted him to be frozen actually prevailed. And when I last remember the story, you can Google it or look it up, but my last recollection was his head is still in cryogenic freeze somewhere in San Diego.
Yeah, Peter, it was his son, John Henry, who died about 10 years ago, and he's frozen with him, too.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Okay. All right.
If I may, just real briefly, John mentioned a very interesting point as well earlier. He talked about the use of charities. And, we've now seen this two or three different times. We saw this with Sandusky. We see this with Armstrong.
Right,
and a lot of people. Pardon me?
To shield yourself.
Well, I think to some effort, it is an attempt to shield yourself. And I just wonder, if you do good work and you help people, does that in any way come into play here? And you know, it's just something to think about. I'm not sure we have to delve into it.
I don't think
it
should.
Well, no. You know, it depends on what the offense is. If the offense is criminal offense like child molestation, well, you're going to go to jail. It doesn't matter how many.
Well, he just needs a charity for recruitment.
I don't know. I mean, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I think there's usually multiple motivations, and I think at some level he had a good motivation, but I think he probably had bad motivations as well. I think everything is colored with shades of gray.
Okay, folks. There's another story that needs mention. Mantee Teow. Yeah, I'm not sure I pronounced it correctly.
You didn't.
Okay. John, you're the expert. Pronounce the name and tell us the story.
Well, it's Mantee Teow. Common spelling for you, Simon. Well, it's just another example of life imitating art. It's a great reality story, and I don't want to get into the details, and I'm sure people are aware of it. You can't hide from it, but I would just encourage people to do their due diligence on the Internet. And whether or not he was taken in, I'm skeptical, but he's a young kid. I think we do got to cut him a lot more slack than Lance Armstrong. I don't want to commingle the two in any way because of his age and whatnot. But I think his true motivation for this will come out, and a lot's riding on it for him, too, because, you know, the NFL draft's all about money, as Sam was saying. Seems to be a common theme. And if he drops several spots or even around, that's going to cost millions of dollars. So he better come up with something quick and stick to it.
Okay. And John, obviously, you're not willing to get into the nits and grits of the story.
Well, how many variations of it are? I mean, it's all over the Internet, and people can decide for themselves.
Oh, okay. All right. Here's what I have seen. Right? He's a young kid from Hawaii. He's really good at football. And he didn't win the Heisman, but I believe he was in second place.
Right, and in his defense, I think his girlfriend was from Hawaii, and we all know how hard it is to get a birth certificate out of that state.
That was cute.
I got to interject a little politics, Simon.
I love it. Keep them coming.
So he meets a girl online and falls in love. Is that such an unlikely event?
Yeah, well, without seeing her picture in like 3 years, I mean, I'm not a professional person on the Internet. I've never used Skype, but what I understand, all the kids use it now.
Okay. Sam, yep. you have lots of people that work for you. I'm sure you must have heard of a few internet encounters.
Sure. I mean, I think this case is I think there's a lot of things. When I first wrote about it, I naturally said, how much did they scam the Leukemia Society for? So that was my first reaction was, I hate that that's so cynical I've gotten it. But, you know, that's what I heard, that this woman, the girlfriend never existed. And she died of leukemia the same year as Weekend, his grandmother, who I guess really does exist or did exist, died. So I was skeptical, and I still think the money thing's going to come out eventually somewhere. Either he was being blackmailed, or it was a hoax that he was part of, or I do think he's part of it. What part of it is, I don't know. I don't think we're going to find out for a while. But what's interesting has been the bar talk, and as Peter had called them earlier before the show began, those are the real prophets of our society, the regulars at bars. My bar came up with one. They came up with some interesting scenarios on why he did this. And since everyone else has their own, and I'm sure other people have said this one, I'll share it with everybody. They believe that he might have been gay. Is gay, and invented this girl so it looked like he had a girlfriend, and that she died, obviously, and he's in mourning, so he's not going to be seeking to get a girlfriend at any later life, and that maybe there were whispers going around about that, and this guy, you know, wants to be an NFL, you know, first-round pick in the NFL. He's a great football player, and that's part of the thing. That's one thing I heard. Another one told me that, you know, again, I don't follow college football a lot, is that he was trying to be the first defensive player to win the Heisman. They wanted to develop all this hype around him, the reports of Notre Dame, and, of course, Notre Dame played in the championship game and got their butts kicked. And so did he that night, by the way. He didn't have a great game. But anyway, that would help his image, so to speak, with, you know, he's a loving, caring, compassionate person who's a warrior who plays football, and that would help him, and that was good public relations for him going into the year. Again, I thought about the money, get the PR, win all these awards, et cetera, that this would help him in the nation's eyes, you know. But those are the two biggest ones I've heard in regards to that. The third one is something Manny sent me an email about, because he's, you know, Mr. USC football. He's a Trojan. I think if you cut Manny Balling, I think he bleeds whatever the colors. What's USC's colors, guys? I don't know.
Cardinal and
gold.
Okay, well, he would bleed that color, whatever. But anyway, he said that he thinks it's all because USC and Notre Dame have this incredibly good big rivalry. There are some Samoan alumni football players at USC who had some relationships with Mante's family or something, and they staged this elaborate hoax to get him because of the USC Notre Dame rivalry. And I guess something of that has come out too. I haven't seen that one or heard that one fleshed out more, and maybe that's what it has to be. I just don't understand why the kid hasn't. He's just been beating around the bush about the whole thing. It just came out naturally, the cover-up's being worse than the crime here, because I don't think anybody was hurt, but his reputation. I don't know why he just didn't stand up and say, you know, if I was advising him, I would have said, look, here's what you say. Hey, the American media is stupid. I just proved it. I hoaxed all you guys. None of you do any research. None of you do any your homework. You're repeaters. You're not reporters. And, hey, guess what? I hoaxed you. You know, poked you in the eye, and I enjoyed it. So that's what the American media needed. That's what I would have advised him to say, but he didn't call me.
He did expose the failure of journalism, huh, Sam?
I mean, really. The guy who broke it, is a I forget, it wasn't the mainstream media by any stretch of the imagination. It was some kid on a blog who an internet blog or blogger or something, has a web page and everything. He's the one who broke the whole story. Whether he was tipped off about it or not, I do not know. But he's the one who did it. You know, these other guys don't care. They hear, oh, she got a girlfriend. Isn't it odd that this guy never visited his girlfriend? I mean, that's what I said. This is what I don't understand. She never came to one. Come on, guys. Notre Dame football. It's my son played high school football with two kids who went there and got scholarships and went on to the NFL.
Well, there's one big fact that is prevalent in this case, and nobody's talked about it, but it is a big fact. This kid is a Mormon, and from everything I can gather, he is a virgin. And that's important to him, okay? So if you are a true, young, adolescent, male Mormon, and I guess if the theory is you're not supposed to have anything to do with a woman until you get married, then the only real relationship you can have with a woman is this, quote-unquote, a new term that has come up in our vocabulary these days, a, quote-unquote, emotional relationship. And I typically see these things in the workplace. they usually give rise to sexual harassment claims. You know, what happens is people work together. One or both of them may be married, but because of the proximity, because of the work, because of the day-in interaction, one or both of them develops basically a full-on, full-blown emotional attachment to someone, and it may be utterly and completely unrequited in a physical sense, but by all accounts, the feelings that these people have are incredibly strong. They, you know, they've fallen in love, and they can't help it. Now,
I have to point out that I was Mormon until I was 16.
Is that true?
Yep.
I thought you were going to slip in a Mitt Romney jab, Simon, but that's okay.
You know, I don't know, but you factor into it another thing which is very prevalent in our culture today, which didn't exist 20 years ago, and that is this whole notion of an internet persona. I'm not incredibly sophisticated with social networking, and I'm not getting the sense that anyone in our age group is particularly either, but people become incredibly proficient at creating social personas of themselves. Now, usually what happens is these are exaggerations of real character traits. You know, a guy puts a picture of himself up from 20 years ago instead of a current one, or he photoshops a picture. He takes his face, he puts it on some other guy's body, or a girl does the same thing. It is incredibly possible in today's day and age to augment and magnify and, in fact, create an entire identity through all forms of media that may or may not be based in reality. This to me takes that concept to incredible conclusion extensions, but it's not the first time we've seen this. There was a movie on TV several years ago. It's a great watch if any of you guys want to watch it, and it is called Catfish. And it is a very interesting film about a guy who supposedly strikes up a relationship with a woman on the internet, and he decides after a long period of interaction with her, he's going to go visit her. And the entire movie is a documentary where this guy, he and his buddy, these two guys, basically go to Michigan, and they hunt this woman down. And all along the way, they're getting all these red flags, all these red flags, all these red flags. And finally, they show up on the doorsteps of this woman, a woman, and they say, "Is so-and-so here?" And a woman answers the door, and just to make it simple, she doesn't look anything like her picture, and she says, "Oh, so-and-so's not here." And they say, okay, we'll wait and blah, blah, blah. And then about, you know, a day later, they have a private moment. And this woman who says that this other woman's not here, she eventually confesses and says, I was doing it. It was me. Now, there are a lot of things that emerge from this, but it was very apparent that the guys who were investigating, that they were suspicious. I also did get a distinct feeling that these guys who were investigating – I found myself questioning their sexual orientation. I just did. I couldn't help it. If you look at this case, apparently this guy Tuiasa Sopo, and Tuiasa Sopo may be a very common name in Hawaiian Samoan culture, but it's also the name, just to align with Manny's conspiracy theory, it's a name of a very famous or a popular ex-USC football player by the name of Manny Tuiasa Sopo. But apparently this Tuiasa Sopo guy basically orchestrates and creates a woman and then basically creates this fantasy relationship with Manti Te'a, which seems crazy to me. It also turns out, just for personal whatever, this woman, the pictures of this woman, she supposedly, the pictures are obviously of a real person, and this woman supposedly lives near us, me in Torrance, California, which is a few miles away, and her last name apparently is, it appears to be of Irish or Scottish descent, so I don't know what to make of any of it. I do think that Manti probably got caught up in the publicity of this thing and probably bought into it too much, and he probably at some point had a difficult time getting off the tracks. You know, he had gone down a certain path, and the media loved it, and everybody loved it. And I think he bought it hook, line, and sinker, and then when he started to get suspicious, he should have just shut up about it, but he couldn't help himself. And I think he's guilty of talking too much and using poor judgment and getting caught up in an attempt to aggrandize himself and appease all these fans and win a Heisman and play it all up. And then, you know, it got too big for him. And when it got too big for him, he rolled over and he said it's all a hoax. So, you know, I don't know what else to say.
Okay, so the basic deal is you're saying he knew it was a hoax.
No, I thank you. I'm not quite saying that. I get the feeling that I think he loves attention, and I think he comes from a family in Hawaii that supposedly loves attention. And there's been a lot of talk about how his family in Hawaii, they love attention, and they go out of their way to get it. I think, and his teammates to criticize him, they said he loves attention. I don't know at what point he knew this was a hoax. I don't know. I kind of get the impression that he bought it at first, and he probably did. This is like a dream woman for him. I mean, they created a dream scenario with a dream woman who would be like his dream woman. And he's a 19-year-old, 21-year-old kid. And I think at some point he clearly realized there may be something suspicious here. But for whatever reason, he couldn't bring himself around to acknowledge it or couldn't see it. I do find it hard to believe that he was intentionally involved from the hoax from day one and knew it was, but that is a possibility. There appears to be some sort of relationship between him and this Tuiasa Sopo guy, and if you're going to orchestrate this kind of conspiracy, what you want is the fall guy to step up and say, it's all on me, it's all bad, I did it, I tricked him, I duped him. And maybe that's what he's got in this Tuiasa Sopo guy. I don't know, because that's exactly what this Tuiasa Sopo guy has done. He's completely fessed up and said that he's 100% guilty and Manti's 0% guilty and totally innocent. Now, I don't know if that's true or that's all contrived.
Oh, it all smells of...
It smells fishy.
You know, yeah. John or Sam... Do you have any thoughts on this story?
Well, Simon, didn't you meet your wife on the internet?
Yes, I did.
Well, you know, that worked out, so there are happy endings, right?
Yeah, I met her 10 years ago. Actually, probably 11 years ago. And we've been married for 7. And I knew... Damn well, she's female.
Well, how long before you met her did you communicate?
Oh, probably 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. But,
it's a different world now. You know, I remember growing up, I was born in 65, and I was, that's my birthday. And in the 70s and 80s, everybody was out having a good time meeting people. There wasn't all this internet stuff. There wasn't an AIDS crisis. There wasn't a fear about all this kind of stuff. But those things that happened as we were growing up have caused people to change. People, it's not like the fun and free-loving 60s for a lot of people in the modern world. They're apprehensive about doing certain things, and they want to take their time. And people now talk openly about how proud they are that they're a virgin and they're waiting for marriage. When I was growing up, if you said that, it was an embarrassment. You were a joke. But now it's different. Now people talk openly about how proud they are of their choice and blah, blah, blah. And, I do believe this kid is a Mormon. At least that's what he says. And I don't know what to make of it. I think it's a different era when this kind of stuff is much more possible than it was when, I was his age. You know, if I was his age and, if you didn't actually physically, get close to your girlfriend, she wasn't your girlfriend. I mean, that's it. You know, what are you talking about? But these days, it's a different world.
Well, Simon, so you can kind of relate to the guy. And you, for us who really haven't experienced internet dating, it's foreign, but... I guess you can develop an emotional attachment on the internet.
Oh,
you're probably the exception, but still.
Not if the person doesn't exist.
How are you going to know that if you don't see
him? No doubt. You've
got to know that the person, if you believe the person exists, if you believe they're real, then they're real. it's and if this kid believed right up until December whatever, I mean, apparently what happened is in early December, after she had quote-unquote passed away, he gets a phone call from the woman's voice. And she says, it's me. And she started talking strangely. She started talking about, I wanted to tell you this, and there were drug dealers, and I was attempted murder, and, you know, just crazy stuff.
Oh.
And he actually wasn't sure if he could believe her. He wasn't sure if she was really who she said she was. It was such a mind blow for him, according to him. You know, when people go down a certain path and they think and believe something, it's very difficult to just get them to turn on a dime and think something else. They need time. And he has this phone call on December 6th. He's still kind of, according to him, he's still kind of trying to figure this whole thing out. And then on December whatever it was, later that month, he sits down with somebody at the university and says, look, I got to tell you something. I think this is all a hoax. So all of that seems consistent and reasonable to me. I still don't know if he and Tuiasa Sopo got together and put this whole conspiracy together. But if they did, then the one out they would have is that Tuiasa Sopo would do exactly what he's doing now, which is basically say it's all on me.
Right.
That way you've got a perfect cover-up. Now, I don't know if that happened, but that would be the perfect escape valve.
Right, and there's nothing criminal in it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. But it's just like what I was talking about earlier. I mean, you know, who's got you know, I don't think there's anything criminal in it. I don't see anything criminal in it. I suppose there's an argument that they're impersonating a false person, but impersonating someone else. But they didn't do it for the Tuiasa Sopo doesn't appear to have done it for money. So
right, no furtherance of a crime like extortion.
Yeah, no furtherance of a crime. It's all just some big hoax. Now,
yeah.
In California, we have a cause of action called intentional or negligent infliction of emotional distress, and it's arguable that if that cause of action exists in other jurisdictions, which I think
it does.
Civil. That's civil. So you could sue them for money, but, you know, if this is it seems like Tuiasa Sopo and Manti have some sort of dialogue or relationship that they seem to still have some communication together, and I don't think Manti is going to sue him. I don't know if other people could sue him, but, you know, it all seems like a tempest in a teapot when everything's done from a legal perspective. From whatever else it is, if this guy plays well, if he pans out as an athlete, I think people will forget about this stuff. If he's a bust, then they're just going to think about this forever. They're just going to say, you're a big bust.
Yeah, I think
okay.
You're right.
Well, here is the big question. Right. You know, he's going to probably enter the draft. Has this really screwed up his position?
I think it's affected it adversely. I think he will suffer in the draft. It's a question of extent, and a lot of it will have to do with how he performs at the combines, you know, and how he performs in terms of the various drills that they put him through between now and then. But he's basically done his spin control. He came out, he did an interview on with Jeremy Schapp, and he told his side of the story. And if Tuiasa Sopo, if he was in on this and Tuiasa Sopo totally takes the fall for it, then he's probably good in that regard. And the only question is, will he actually perform well? If he lays another egg like he did in that BCS championship game when he was just a big dud, then, you know, irrespective of his reputation, nobody's going to want him because he's overvalued. He's not as good as everybody says. But if he turns out to be, you know, more like Junior Seau than the Manti Teau we saw in the BCS, then he's got a future. I think it's going to hurt him, but I don't think it's going to kill him yet.
Okay, Sam, you're a football fan, and alas,
well,
neither of us.
Well, if he would have drafted him, but Raiders, I think he'll drop out of the first round, but not much farther. And Peter already said it. He laid a big egg, but all of Notre Dame did. In the championship game. So my whole thing with this guy is with how much money and support and wealth there is in college football and how big it is and all this sort of stuff, why he never couldn't find time to meet her face to face. Of course, you didn't exist. But why he never took time to fly out, just like you told about that movie, Peter. They drove out. They wanted to go see that this person exists. If you grab this emotional attachment like you described, and I understand what you're talking about, it makes perfect sense. Wouldn't it be of the desire at some point, off season, college football, that Mante wants to go meet this girl, introduce him to his family? She's also dying of leukemia or whatever, and do something. Maybe even bring her to a Notre Dame game as a, you know, because what's that thing called? Where they do not angels for make a wish. You know, make a wish song. Bring her to the football game with her boyfriend that they've got this incredible relationship online. They're in love with each other and this and that. He brings her out. Could you imagine the pouring of emotion and fun and how much publicity that would have been? And that's why this guy is in on it. It was all a publicity.
Well,
I don't know about the gay thing. Okay, that's a whole different thing. But Mormon or not, he was in it for the publicity, and that's what this whole thing is about. And by the way, Peter, I am so impressed you can pronounce those guys' last name, because I would not dare attempt to.
Well, I grew up following Manu Tuiasosopo, and he was a great player for the Trojans, and he went on to the pros. And I grew up, you know, with these guys in SC, hearing these names, Palomalu, Junior Seau, blah, blah, blah.
One correction, he was a Bruin.
Was Tuiasosopo Bruin? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
I thought they were all Trojans.
No,
there was another one
he played quarterback for Washington and the Raiders.
Trojans are good things when you are
pun intended,
young.
Right? Well, not for the moment.
I stand corrected if that's true,
this
John.
This is all a hoax for publicity. As far as the sexual orientation thing goes, I can see why people bring that up, but I didn't even know he was a Mormon until he just said so, Peter. So I'm going to throw that one out with that. Okay, I don't think the sexual orientation one flies anymore.
There's one thing that I do fault Manti Te'o for, and I do hold him accountable for this. He really shouldn't have been talking about this. He shouldn't have been playing this up to the press. I mean, if he had an emotional relationship with a woman online, okay, fine. You know, but he shouldn't be talking about it. He shouldn't be telling the press, oh, you know, I think at a certain level that's where he's most indictable, because he did that just to pander to the press. Now, that
right.
doesn't mean he was in on it, but when he was talking about it as openly as he was to members of the press, that was, in my opinion, a guilty motive on his part. He was solely trying to make himself seem more popular or more likable, and probably at some level he wanted to boost his chances for the Heisman or something. Now, he may not have been in on it. He may have been in on it. But when he starts talking about it openly with the press, my girlfriend with leukemia, who, by the way, I've never met before, that, to me, is the biggest wrong that he did here at a minimum.
No, wrong. I mean, he met her, supposedly, at a football game.
At Stanford.
Well, I don't recall that he actually met her. I thought he said that that she was from Stanford, but that, you know, I recall him saying, I don't recall him ever saying to anybody that he had actually met her, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
Well, his family said they met her at the Stanford game. I think he did too, but I'm not sure. Simon, you would know.
I don't know. If he did that, now you have to be in on it, Peter. If he did say that. I think this is all about publicity.
Supposedly she went to Stanford, and when they played there, he met her.
Oh.
Well, I think that the way he dealt with that, and it could be true or false, is that he said that his father or his mother had gotten the impression that he had met her, and he may have told them that just because he didn't want to look any more silly than he already did.
You could be right. I'm not sure.
But that's the way he spun it. And also, point of note, John, you're 100% correct. I take it all back. Manu Tuiasosopo was a Bruin. I don't know which Tuiasosopo was a USC guy, but I could have sworn there was one.
No, there were Samoans there, but no Tuiasosopo.
Well, I wonder who I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of somebody, but I don't know who it is. It's going to drive me nuts.
The one who played for the Patriots, Tatupu. Am I pronouncing his name right? Moji Tatupu?
Yeah, he played for SC.
He was the blocking back for Ricky. How do I remember this stuff? But I can't remember what I had for breakfast.
Well, because we all grew up watching these guys. Well, I guess there's a lot of Tuiasosopos. There was Marcus, who played at Washington. Anyway, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and he played for the Raiders.
Yeah.
Okay, gentlemen, I hate to do this, but we're just about out of time. It has been a wonderful afternoon. Once around the table, going to start with John.
All right, Simon, good to be with you guys this week. I hope you have a good week. Always a pleasure. I'd like to give people some advice, Simon. Disregard the happy ending that happened to you. I'd like to tell people, especially kids, get off the internet and put down the mouse, because you're going to get carpal tunnel syndrome when you get to my age. Go meet people the old-fashioned way like I had to. Go to Sam's Bar, order a bucket of wings, a couple of drafts, and talk to people, actually real people, and you'll be amazed what you find, because I find the best advice about running the country is usually delivered in bars and barber shops.
I love it.
It's true. Sam, back me up on that.
Of course I am.
The wings and drafts and good conversation.
And Sam, obviously your number two on the list.
Number two, just like Mr. Obama's second term. So we all wish him, even though I didn't vote for him or support him, I wish him well as he takes the oath of office. One of the great things about our country is a lot of other countries change leaders by bloodshed, just at the ballot box. And I hope he and the congressional Republicans and the Democrats and just get their act together and make all our lives a lot easier, because it's getting tougher out there. I don't want to be a cynic. My predictions, by the way, it's great to be here with you guys. I'm sorry I'm here last week. Happy New Year to you guys again and all that. Thank you for the opportunity. It was a very interesting show talking about popular culture and bringing it into it and getting all the different viewpoints. And I do want to say I'm going to predict a hard bar versus a hard bar Super Bowl.
Wow.
And I will go crazy because I can't stand both those guys on the sideline. They drive me up a wall.
I'm still predicting the Chargers in the Super Bowl, but my
wife... Oh, by the way, Simon, I have to tell you something. I am mad at you. The Browns hired all the fired ex-Charger coaches. How about that? We have North Turner is going to be our offensive coordinator.
But my wife and stepson assure me that there is no chance that the Chargers are going to make the Super Bowl. I'm shocked. And finally, Peter, your final comment.
Well, I keep thinking of all these things to say. They keep flitting in and out of my head. I'm predicting a Harbaugh versus Belichick Super Bowl, and I
haven't heard of either of those teams.
Well, and I agree with you. There's no way the Chargers can win the Super Bowl in 2013, but beyond that, who knows? what we've talked about today has a lot of the same themes that we always talk about. It's just a different version. But it's just a different version of the old motto, buyer beware. We've got to be mindful of the things we buy and the things we put into our bodies and the things that we purchase, because we never know when somebody's going to sell us something that's bad for us. It's not good for us. It's a bill of goods. And the same thing is true with the people we choose to idolize and worship. You know, we got to be careful about the people we, you know, look up to, because we don't really know what a lot of these people are, and we live in a world where they have tremendous incentive, just like the businesses do, just like other people do, to sell us something that we want to buy so that they can benefit from it. And I would just encourage people to, you know, try to look within themselves and find their own measure of heroic qualities within themselves, and look less to others for those, because oftentimes it's just a bill of goods that we're being sold.
Gentlemen, I really want to thank you for taking time to talk to me. I'm sure we'll be back next week. Till then, it's goodbye.
Take care.